Hello, everyone. This is Jack the Generalist, and this is the Generalist's podcast. It's a very mouthy word. I don't know how to say it all the time, but yeah. Today I have a guest, Joppi. I would let him introduce himself, because I think you're the best to introduce yourself and what you do.
Perfect. My name is Joppe. I come from the Netherlands. I work at Ubisoft here in Berlin. I'm not talking about Ubisoft today, but everything else is permitted to talk about for me.
All right, perfect. So a huge disclaimer, we're in this podcast, we're not representing anyone or anything but Joppe. And we'll just talk about his journey through art, you know, what kind of things that he discovered throughout his journey that led to where he is right now. So the next question, I guess, is why VFX? Why tech art? What brought you here?
Yeah, it's super trippy. For me, how I even got into games specifically was at school, they gave you like a list of all the courses you could follow or all the colleges you could go to and follow. And I was very bored by that list, except for one thing, which was games, because that's what I played.
And cool.
I didn't know there was like actually like colleges doing that. So I was like, you know what, let's do that. If I don't know what else I could do.
Nice. How old were you there?
That was that. I think it was, I was 16.
Wow.
And there was that list. And I was specifically like, I was only looking at barber because that was sort of interesting and games. But then, games seems the more fun.
Wow,
direction.
So very early on, you were able to see it as an actual option, because I think like a lot of people when they grow up, like, for example, different countries, different cultures, they never really see it as a viable option. So it's really cool that you were able to see like, oh, actually, I could pursue this. And it's its own like science, its own knowledge. So what did you take? What were your steps after that?
Right after school, I immediately joined that school. It was like Media College Amsterdam.
Cool.
So it's like in Amsterdam, just this college. And they do like a game art generalist course.
Oh, wow.
So it was literally everything. I still feel, it was so unfocused, but still feel like for me, that was kind of the best option. Because like I had ADHD, or ADD, sorry. Hmm. And there, like learning to focus was like super hard for me. So having a school to specifically do that, like I still like recommend going to game art school for some people that really have struggle like learning. Because for me, it was like, that was the best option because I can't focus on my own. I couldn't self-study at all.
I think so I will change the name of the podcast to the ADHDers, because like, oh my god.
I noticed that a lot, like everyone has ADHD, and specifically VFX. I was literally thinking about it yesterday, where I was like, VFX is such a, maybe that's why I like VFX so much as well, is like, it's so ADHD, where you just can focus on 10 things at the same time, and you're like, oh, here, I'll just change that, and then I'll go to the next part, go to this, you know, and then, because before I did like 3D, and 3D is so linear and boring, you model it, and then you unwrap it, but then, oh, something's wrong with the model, okay, then you have to delete some purposes, and then try to, horrible.
And also, like, the results are not instant, and they're not real time. That you lose the the connection of this like instant gratification, and with VFX you have that dopamine hit every time you change like one little parameter, one little number. You're like, oh, that's a different effect. Oh wow, I feel like it's
perfect. And that's what I was also thinking. Like, why movie effects are so different is because that's also super slow, and you have to like wait 5 minutes before you actually see what you're doing. It's like not made for me. Like, everything needs to be snappy.
Oh man, I'm so glad that we get to talk about this because this is so perfect. And also tech art, I feel, is like, this is just my feeling. I'm not an expert on the topic, but I feel like it's the perfect mix between ADHD and autism somehow. Like, I had a guest yesterday who, she described it the best. She was like, I really, really enjoy shaders because they are the perfect mix of, they are so beautifully logical. Like, I think she was talking about rigging, actually. It is so beautifully logical. I was like, wow, this is the perfect explanation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you went to school. You learned generalist game art. How was that? How many years? What were the difficulties?
That was 4 years. It was actually way too easy because it was like just everyone passed because art is kind of subjective, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
At least, like, of course, you like have to learn about how Unity works, but that just comes with it because that's the main engine they worked in. Mm. And you have to learn 3D modeling. But other than that, like, I think literally everyone passed unless they actually kind of gave up. Mm. That's like on them, not really on the school.
Yeah, got it.
And then I finished that school and then I couldn't find a job because sure you pass school, but like maybe you don't have like the actual abilities to do anything.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's also with schools, it's like you learn so much, but you have to actually put in the time outside of school to actually kind of develop these fundamentals, because if the school is not teaching it to you, then
listen,
you're just,
like,
below it.
I don't
average,
think so. What we do should be taught in a school, like, academically, honestly speaking. Mm. And I stand for that, and I lobby for that, because I think what we do is more of a vocational school. Like, you need to be able to work and also study.
Yeah.
Because, like, look at the junior level of entry. It's always like, oh, you need to be that good, and you need to have so much experience. And it's like, how am I going to... like snap my finger, and they tell you, well, you have to go to art jams, and like, so basically I have to work. Yeah, you have to work. Okay, yep. So where's that system? There is no system to support you. It's all, you're all on your own. You have to find a job to do on the side and grind on the other side. Or when you're in school, you have this illusion of a system of degrees, and you know, you have to pass the grade or whatever, but all of this is illusion. It's not preparing you for anything. I bet you had, while you were in school, you had to prepare yourself for the job market, or you were shocked after you finished school that you were not hireable. So how did you manage that after school?
Yeah, I didn't.
Nice.
I mean, for me, it was I just wasn't on that level of like actually getting a job. Then I kind of gave up, and then I tried to do something different. I almost became like an air steward at like a flight company.
Mm.
And then I saw the people there and I was like, this is not my crowd. This is really like not where I'm supposed to be. And then I was like, what I always wanted at Game Art was kind of like, I was kind of introduced to technical art, or at least knowing what it was, but I didn't understand shit. So I was like, if I now do like game programming, I'll get there. But I didn't get there.
Okay.
I mean, I did a bachelor's degree focused on game programming, where I was like, okay, now I can do like the whole development cycle of like doing game art, fully every subject of it, and then also game programming. Then I started developing my own games, but I think I launched one game, which was a small mobile game, just to show that I could. Mm. And then I also, you know, got kind of familiar with some people in the Dutch industry because of all the internships I had, because I, for both schools, I had to do like two internships.
Yeah.
So eventually, I kind of got familiar with people there. And then I landed, then after finishing my bachelor's degree in game programming, I landed a job as a game artist, which is also kind of like ass backwards.
But basically, you were able to pitch yourself as a game artist that knew how to code, knew how the logic works, which is like a huge advantage when it comes to hiring someone that can do game art. Because like a lot of artists that can do amazing art, right? They probably don't know how the game works or what. Like, and you always have this problem between like communication between like the tech department and the art department. You were able probably to like, you know, get both of them on the same team and explain to the artist why this feature is not doable or it's not as easy as they think.
Especially in like in indie companies where they always look for generalists because like you don't have the funds to even hire like specialists. So you just hire whoever can work on their own. And then specifically for me, that's how I sold myself, because I was like, okay, I'm a programmer. I know how to make, okay, prefabs. Sure, that's super easy. You learn it in a day. But like, I know how to code. I know how to like maybe write a script for like rotating an object or whatever, or like, yeah, if you have coins in a level or whatever, and then I can program the pickups. And that was very advantageous for like a mobile game company in the Netherlands. They were actually kind of doing super iterative processes where they wanted like small mobile games. They released like a mobile game every 2 weeks, I think, or at least once a month.
Damn.
Yeah, so that was a grind. Whoa. But there I was like super easy for me to at least like work together with a developer and say like, okay, I need this. I probably can't program this because I'm like too new of a programmer to do this. Mm. I'm not really dedicated as a programmer. But then I can at least like figure something out, you know?
Yeah, you at least have the basic. You have the vocabulary to talk to the tech team and be able to ask, like, initiate the question of like, hey, how do you do this? Because I've tried this. And they will be like, okay, that is a good approach, but here's a better approach, right? It's a difference between like if you're an artist who picked up a brush or, you know, an artist who did not pick up a brush, and it's probably easier to take you by the hand and like show you a couple of tricks or a couple of techniques to for you to improve on. And that's the idea of a generalist who is bad at everything, good at everything as well, good enough to be able to expand on it anytime. And that is valuable for a small team, which is something I don't see a lot of people aim for. And I've been talking to like my last two guests who were like, yeah, no one is aiming for AA. No one is aiming for indie. Although there is money there, it's probably better working condition as well, you know, or it's a different working condition, let's just say. A lot of people just grow up in the industry getting taught to use even like programs like Maya and ZBrush and things like that as if it was the industry standard. But then you look at the industry and it's falling apart. So you're like, should I really learn the industry standard or should I look now into other solution that could guarantee me a job maybe in AA or in a smaller studio? Like a movie like Flow that was made in Blender completely, right? It was not made in Maya and it won the Oscars because there are tools that are good enough. Yes, they are not the industry standard, but they could really land you a job in a smaller company where they cannot afford those softwares. So that kind of makes you unique in that area. Have you gone through something like that with your job hunt or your strategy of getting a job?
Interestingly enough, I feel like industry standard is such a like strange term because it really depends on the kind of the job that you do. Because like for example, like I noticed with character artists, of course, you work always in ZBrush or whatever because that's how you share files and everyone works in that same thing, and you can't just be like a sculptor in Blender and then hope that everyone kind of adapts to you. But like for 3D modeling specifically, it's like if you have like FBXs or whatever, it's fine to work in whatever format you want, and you can just work in your favorite software. So there's like just environment artists that just work in Blender in AAA, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like nobody cares as long as you can like export it to the engine. Then who gives a damn?
And like there's like different tools and different whatever. If the results are the same or to the level, with like similar time. Like here's the thing. If an artist you hired really really works well with Blender, right? And maybe take them 2 hours to get something out. Why would you risk teaching them a whole like new program and like risk them taking even longer time? But that's a different topic to talk about, of course.
But also it's like adapting to a program. It doesn't take that long. I'm super used to sculpting in Blender, but for me to pick up ZBrush, I touched ZBrush in the past and it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, you can just get going in like 2 months, or at least you can like start the first week, you can already churn out like your own sculpts and stuff. So
and then there's Houdini.
That's true. That's what I recently started working with though. Well, yeah, that's something different.
Okay, so you dabbled a little bit with Houdini. How was that?
I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, for me, it was like such a black box kind of like, I'll never understand it and I'll just accept that I don't understand it.
Mm.
But then I just, every time I approach anything that I could do with Houdini, I just force myself to work in Houdini and then figure it out from there. So I haven't opened Blender in a while now just because like, you know, I could technically do this in Houdini. Like my most recent project, you can also see it on this one where it's like it's assembling this cannon and it shoots the moon. Everything was there, was done with Houdini just because I was like, I just want to force myself to use this.
Yeah.
And then just go from there. I feel like that's what I also do with most of my portfolio projects. I think it's also really good for like when students want to actually develop their portfolio.
Yeah.
It's usually like try to force yourself into something that you haven't done before. For example, VDBs or simulations or whatever. Every time you do like a new portfolio project, try to do something new and don't just do the same thing over and over again and expect something to change.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And also, like, when you do that, you kind of... That's what, like, novelty is all about, right? That's what, like, brings you to a whole different market. Because there will be that one project that is looking for someone who knows Houdini when it comes to modeling, because they're looking to scalability when it comes to proceduralism. And it is kind of a gamble. I get it. It is a gamble. But, like, here's the thing. The other gamble is... You're doing what everybody else is doing, and you're competing with everyone else. Meaning, you're competing with people who have 20 years of experience of the thing that you want to get into. Say it is like visual effects riot style or whatever. These things have been established, and everybody been doing them. You know, so like when Marvel is going to look for someone who can draw Hulk, they will go to the person who were drawing Hulk for like 20 years. But if Marvel is going to go to the person who is drawing the... I don't know, the female version of Hulk with, like, purple stripes or whatever. You know, like, a remix of it. Something a bit more special, more specific. Then you have limited your competition from, like, 100% of you competing with literally everyone else to maybe 30%. Now you're competing with, like, a niche, right? And I think that is important to, like, understand, especially when it's about competing with markets, because a lot of people, when they start, they're like, oh, I really want to do visual effects and I want to work at Riot. Okay, that's a long path to take. And of course, it's going to take you a lot of grind. But just know that your competition is going to be fierce. And you're competing
everyone,
with a lot
basically.
Of everyone, exactly. You're the norm, the mainstream.
It's like, yeah, like VFX Apprentice, for example. That's like a prime example of like everyone wants to do Riot style VFX and... I mean, they're like expanding now, which like actually is like really good for them. But it shows how many people want to end up at Riot and want to do Riot art and kind of take that as their footnote to start in the industry. I think it's still a good, because like you still get all the fundamentals, but
sure.
I mean, people look up to the people who don't just follow the flow, I guess.
Yeah, I think what we're both talking about, we're not dissing anybody. Like, we're not dissing VFX Apprentice or anything. Actually, it's out of love of real-time VFX that we say, hey, you know, it's time for something different. It's time to teach, like, the spectrum of stylization. It's time to teach what realism is and how to expand upon it. Like, if I was an illustrator, that would be, like, one of the first things I learned, right? Because illustrators do that very well. They each establish their own style like very early on. That's why a lot of them can be art directors easily, because they really understand what style is. And I've been like, I started kind of as an illustrator. I started as a colorist in my early career. I kicked off my art interest with coloring. And so I kind of was surrounded with a lot of like illustrators and what they do. And when you sit with them and you're surrounding yourself with that like environment, you start realizing how they are thinking. But then you go, if you want to like learn real-time VFX, you start picking up on this thing that is like, oh, this is standard. This is industry standard. This is la la la, blah, blah, blah. And like, if you have a bit of more open-minded about like art and illustration, you will have like this bigger spectrum to work with, like, I feel. And I don't see that part a lot, yeah.
It also shows from like Jason Kaiser, who does like the VFX Apprentice. He started from 2DFX, I think.
Yeah,
I think you said in the past. Yeah. And when you see his reviews of like how to do VFX and how he analyzes people's portfolio work, it's like actually about like shape and like actual like how to assemble an effects or how composition works. And it really shows that he has like such a knack for like fundamentals of actual art
instead of just VFX. Exactly.
Or like, yeah, VFX is such a weird subject because you just have to kind of expand it beyond what just effects is, but also, you know, color theory, composition. And it shows with him especially because he has that illustrator background, I guess.
Yeah, and there's like different aspects of VFX. Like, if you want to go the route of like really hand drawn, you know, frame by frame, or let's say stylization, that's a whole different beast than when it comes to like simulation. Like, if you're working with Houdini and then you take those flip books and you put it in particles, that's like a whole different way to go around that, right? and different way to edit that as well. And I think it's important for us, like as VFX artists, to understand that the category of what we do is called VFX, but how did it come to what it is right now? Like, we have to go through the history a little bit and understand. Even when it comes to like Star Wars, like old movies and all those effects that were shown as an explosion were made, it's kind of the same principle still. Like, if you think about it, it's still the same principle. There was something painted or something that got overlaid over something, and that was like a frame thing. It was 24 frame pictures of an explosion and got overlaid over the movie, and it's that same technique is still used. Or like with Disney, with like the frame by frame illustration, literally illustrating water and illustrating fire, those same principles can also be used for visual effects for games.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we're still kind of like assembling what the fundamentals are for our job. At least not really the fundamentals, but like where we can get the information from, where we can actually improve, and how we even compare like Western VFX versus Asian VFX, because that's also like this whole other subject where they seem to have a whole different set of fundamentals and what is required to be a VFX artist. That now I notice now we're actually kind of like cross-referencing stuff like that, where people actually started to apply for those courses, or like those courses are being finally like English translated. It's really cool to see how this is kind of developing over the past few years now.
Have you attended any of those courses? I'm just curious.
I've been looking at Colosso course.
Yeah, Colosso.
I forgot the guy's name. Yeah. But it looks like super visually impressive. I just, for me, also coming back to the ADD stuff, it's like keeping focus on the course, I already think is really hard. But then also reading subtitles, it's like,
not gonna do that.
Maybe not for me. Maybe I'll wait for an English translation in actual words.
There are really good resources out there that are working on some similar courses, and they will come out like very soon. Like I have special access to some stuff, and one of the resources that I found is called Mad VFX. They're still on New School, but they're really going at it, and especially like the things that I've seen of like what they have planning. Incredible stuff. Like they're finally go ahead.
I love their stuff because it's super like focused on like more realism and more like almost AAA, I guess kind of focused stuff, whereas like this is all stuff you're gonna need when you're actually running the job in the AAA industry.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know, that's also something we've completely been missing. Or at least like VFX Apprentice probably also did it, but then they also had such a focus on stylization that I like that they're like now like a balance, like a scale of like, if you want to go stylized, you go VFX Apprentice, then if you want to go more realistic focused, you go to Mad VFX.
I mean, there's like one thing I have not found regardless where, and I know it's maybe planned somewhere in the sheets and with some of those like courses companies, is like boring topics like implementation and optimization. You kind of get like a gist of it a little bit here and there, but then there's not many that really allow you to have access to a project where it's like, okay, let's do this effect and let's show you how it's gonna be super unoptimized. It will look good, but it will not be optimized. And let's see how it will look and feel after we optimize it. And then we do the same thing for VR and we do the same thing for mobile. That will be proper education, right? I don't see that. I feel like we are thrown, like we are like magicians that can do really beautiful things, right? And then we're thrown in the industry and all of a sudden we're like, oh, this is not working. Oh, sheesh. Like, what should I do? I spent all my time of my freelance work creating the beautiful effects to fit the art direction. But then at the end of that road, you know, I'm not that good at optimization, it seems. And I didn't get the resource to improve or to understand that. So how would you tell people to like improve upon that?
Good question. I feel like that's something you almost just learn at the job, especially if you're hiring like a junior or whatever. Then it's like, we know that you have, like, it's harder to teach, like, the visual kind of eye or, like, timing and stuff like that. That's harder to teach. If a junior has that, then you can, like, at least, like, learn those
work
other
it, yeah.
performance optimizations later.
Mm.
It still would be nice to see it on people's portfolios, but I feel like for a junior, it's a little bit less important, and then you can just kind of deal with that and learn it from a senior, if you have a senior at the company, because sometimes, like, VFX is such a small industry that even at a bigger company, you're working in really small teams.
Yeah.
Good question. I was actually thinking about that, where I was like,
yeah,
where would you find all this info other than scouring the forums or looking at really dry subject matter of, like, technical artists talking about their stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
I've tried to go, like, the technical artist route, and then I found it, like, too boring for me, because it's, like, almost going back to coding, you know, where it's, like, so much, especially when they write stuff, it's so boring. Just make it a bit sexy. That's... make it a bit like reading fun. Add images, whatever.
Yeah, get it. There's this, it's called Jutly, I think. Have you checked their books? They make interesting books about tech art.
I think I bought their book 10 years ago.
And then you never read it.
Exactly.
Just like
I mean, they're... But they did do that, which was kind of more engaging, you know?
Yeah.
At least, like, it looks juicy.
It has pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love us. We're ADHD people. We are like, if it doesn't have pictures, if it's not a video, I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really difficult thing to navigate. Like, we are generalists, and it's like, depending on our background, if we have, like, dabbled a lot or tinkered a little bit with HLSL or rendering, and we understood what a draw call is and things like that, then it's easier for us to, you know, do the flashy things and make them optimized. But if we haven't, I can tell right now there's not much resources out there to learn that, although it's very important for the job, because yes, you can do something that is really beautiful and really appealing. If it's not usable, it's not usable. Like you said, it's rare to find another lead VFX artist in a team, even on a AAA, like, huge studios. I think the biggest I've heard has, like, 8 VFX artists in a team. That's it. Just 8.
And that's a huge team, in my opinion.
Yes, just, like, the biggest team ever.
And then sometimes you have, like, these occasional games where the teams are, like, immense, which, like Diablo 4, for example, where it was, like, surprised to see, like, 70 VFX artists or whatever, like, actually, like, insane numbers. It's such a crazy world. But I actually kind of enjoy that the teams are always so small. It's kind of, like, you just have, like, this super small bonding team, and you can, like, critique each other, and there's no real competition usually. It's just, like, all fun and games.
That's, I mean, truer words have never been spoken, because, like, when I'm doing the podcast, right, I'm now interviewing mostly real-time VFX artists, and I'm not even looking at the numbers anymore. I'm like, wow, this was fun. This was really enjoyable. Like, I'm even, you know, when I see 100 people watched, I'm like, wow, maybe, let's say, 50 of those had no idea about real-time VFX. I probably got, like, 50 people to be interested. Let's just assume that, right? So I'm like... when I started learning VFX, I was like, there's nothing to do passively to learn this skill. Like, where is the conversations that are happening behind doors between, like, professionals, you know, professional VFX artists, and what type of conversations are those? And I couldn't get in, because it's hard to crack in the industry that far. And also, even if you did, you're probably, as a freelancer, you're the only VFX artist. Like, you're isolated, literally. And in terms of events, like, you can go to GDC, and you can go to any conferences. There's nothing that is specifically for real-time VFX, you know? That is missing, too.
True. Yeah, like, yeah. And also, it's super, like, inaccessible in some cases. For example, the GDC stuff, I would love to go, but I just don't have the money and don't have the time to actually fly over to the US.
Absolutely.
And it's so it looks like such an in crowd of, like, you have to really, like, struggle to even get in, or just stop caring.
Yeah.
Stop caring, don't get in.
It's
then just read from other people externally.
it's almost sad, honestly. Like, we do cool things, and unlike magicians, we really want to like showcase what we do. Like, we want to share our knowledge. So that's why like the Discord servers, like RTVFX or whatever you go to, there are people there that are hungry and like almost to a desperate level to show you how cool stuff they make. Like, they're like, yeah, oh, I will teach you how to solve this problem because I face the same problem. Please let me show you. I do cool stuff. And we never get the platform, I feel, to like speak about it. So
yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, you get it.
I mean, yeah, that's what this podcast is good for, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm doing something I really wanted to hear when I first started, because like you do get misunderstandings or like different approaches to VFX or different definitions of VFX. Like, some, if you do like a research a little bit, you might find a post from like 12 years ago where they're talking about that. Well, you kind of need to understand HLSL and visual coding. While that's true and it could expand your knowledge, of course, 100%, it doesn't really, it's not 100% necessary anymore to go that route. It is helpful though, but like, you could start right now with like nodes and stuff.
Yeah, it's developing so fast, and then also like stuff is also being added now where you kind of, now you have to start learning about VDBs eventually. I still haven't really looked into it enough, but like, that's also coming. And then like this stuff is so progressing so fast that I feel like in 10 years we're probably not even doing the same stuff anymore, unless it's like mobile or VR. But then other than that, you're probably like doing all these real-time simulation stuff that Unreal is now developing.
Oh, these are so exciting. Like,
yeah, sort of. For me, it's like, it's scary, but at the same time, you know, who cares?
Is it scary? Really? But it's like, if yeah, go ahead.
You're learning so many fundamentals now, yeah, which, I mean, they always stay relevant, but then eventually they feel like they become unnecessary to need a VFX artist for that, and just throw a tech artist on there and tell them, hey, do like a smoke simulation there, and they just toss it up. It's not really scary, because I feel like VFX artists also always kind of required for that process. But if you do anything like real-time simulation within the engine in games,
I mean, let's pause there for a second, because tech art is such a wide term.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, true.
I could not go away from the fact that in the latest project that I worked on, like, all my leads were like, we have to put you as a tech art because what you did was tech art. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah, it's just a really wide term. It's like, what is a tech artist? Everybody asks that question. I think it's like two positions in the games industry that no one like has a specific definition of what they do. Producers, yeah, it's never clear what they do. And tech artists, it's never like, there's no manual of what they actually do. So even like job descriptions, they always suffer with like tech artists job descriptions.
True. Actually, like, read what the job description is about instead of just assume what it is from the title.
Actually,
like, I don't know, procedural generator is something completely different from like a rigger or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all called tech artists.
Exactly. But there are things sometimes with like job applications or job descriptions in specific. Like, I know a lot of HR people, and they all say like the same thing. We try to minimize the number of people who is going to apply, because there will be a lot of people applying. So we'll just put out their stuff out there to make them afraid. Like, one of the things that they would say, like, mandatory C#, mandatory, I don't know, Python or whatever. And the thing is, they get to demand. That's their thing, right? Like, if you ask someone who's your perfect date, they would put you a list of like their perfect person, right? But that perfect person never exists. So almost all the time, you have people who are bold applying anyway, mostly men, by the way, and then they make it through the job because they were probably the most, like, you know, people that had the courage. And you have like then people, mostly women, by the way, that look at the job, they see that one thing in the description that might not fit their skill, and they're like, oh, this is not for me. I don't want to misrepresent it. It's like, ah, please just apply, damn it. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think like you look at their portfolio, those women are really good. They are really good. But they just think maybe less about themselves, or they take those job descriptions as like the Bible or something. You know what I mean? Like it's exactly what they need. It's like, yeah, but no one is perfect at the end. Soft skills sometimes win over. I don't know, maybe you experienced that. Soft skills win.
Yeah, a lot. I feel like I tell this to students a lot that ask me. It's like some tips that they haven't heard before, and it's always like, for me, try to be like yourself and pleasant enough to interact with. Because I feel like for me, when I mean, I'm not hiring people. I hired people in the past at a previous company where it was like, we look at what fits the team the best, or like what is a good personality to have around the office, because I'm going to be working with you like 24/7. I don't want to work with someone who's kind of like an asshole. Then that's kind of super frustrating to work with. So even if you have like all the skills in the world and you're like, don't have those soft skills of like interacting with people or like commununicating your struggles, or at least be pleasant person to be around,
modesty,
you probably won't be considered. Yeah, especially modesty as well. Some people are so cocky about how good they are or how much better they are than the rest, then people still don't want to work with you, even if you are that good. Even if I believe you, I could believe you and you say you are really good, I'd probably still go with someone who might be a little bit less talented, so to speak, but then more pleasant to be around as a person.
Yeah, because like it's also about feeling, right? Like even if you're like the best, let's say the best VFX artist, best tech artist, you're the lead of the team. If you have someone in your team that is so cocky, let's say, and they're really good, at about what they do. Like no one can argue that, but they're so cocky about like their skills and what they can do that you don't even feel good about yourself anymore, because you're like, you know, I don't like to go to work anymore, basically. Yeah. So it's just to tell, like, to encourage people out there, like, both genders, doesn't matter, all genders in the world, please don't hesitate just because of one job description that says, well, Houdini is mandatory. There is no excuse not to apply these days. There's so much resources out there. You could buy a course and get yourself familiar with Houdini. The fact in the matter is, you will have a lead above you, or someone that is above you in any level. You will tell them, hey, listen, I'm not that good. Can I ask your help with this and that? But of course, it's asked from you to at least get yourself familiar if it says in the job description. But just apply anyway. Soft skills, like you said, and like I said, is like always the winner. People want to work with cool people that they really want to work with, and not the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for me, it was also like, I think you learn Houdini in 2 months, or at least learn Houdini. Like everyone always says, like, you never fully learn Houdini.
You never.
but it's not really that complicated of a program if you kind of force yourself to work with it and then kind of get into it.
Yeah, it's like cooking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're not a chef.
Just give yourself a little bit of time.
You're not a chef if you know how to boil an egg, but you kind of know how to boil an egg, you know? And you can always expand on that. And same thing with game development. Game development is also very complex. It's a complex matter. And there are games that are like Flappy Bird you could probably make in a week. I mean, you mentioned like making a game every month. That is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a reason why I left. I guess. And of course, I got the opportunity to become a VFX artist instead of a generalist, which is kind of my main goal.
Yeah, but VFX artists are kind of generalists. I mean, you could always kind of expand on the other aspects. Like, we have the art aspect, of course, which is technical in a lot of the things that we do. And then after that, it's like, yeah, nice, you have an effect that looks cool and you could hit and it plays. But how are you going to implement that in the game? How is it going to work? What was your first encounter with that, and how did you navigate that world?
Yeah, I don't actually remember, because I feel like for me, I was like, I had the generalist job, and then I started doing VFX stuff that was just kind of required for it, but there was always like, you know, spawn a prefab, make it play, and it works. And then with coding, I could like change the scale and whatever, but then it was never really, for me, I feel like I just kind of slowly rolled into VFX. It was not something I explicitly discovered. It's just something that became part of the job, and then it became the most interesting part of the job, and then excited whenever you're allowed to do a little bit of VFX again.
Yeah.
But yeah, never really that much of a focus on VFX initially. Eventually, I started doing courses and stuff because it was the most interesting part, and I hoped to get out of a generalist job.
Got it. Yeah, but that, like, all the people I had on the podcast that were VFX artists, they all say the same thing. I started as a generalist, including myself. Mm. It's almost like a journey of self-discovery until you land on True. Like that one skill that can use all your other skills that you thought you were bad at, but then, you know, you were making this thing that is extremely amazing and impressive.
Yeah, maybe that's also why VFX is such a nice thing to roll into, because you feel like, I felt as a generalist, I felt like, okay, I'm, you know, people call it master of none, but I felt genuinely like I'm not talented at anything. And then you find out about VFX and you know all these specific skills that you could use over the entire field of VFX, basically.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're a specialist, you know? It's just pretty convenient.
Oh man, I love VFX, and I always find myself curious about more VFX and more knowledge about VFX, and actually not just curious, but like hungry, like, which is something I don't find myself often being. Like, I have interest in 3D modeling, for example. Like, I've had interest since I was 8, right? But like you said, it's tedious. It's like you go from this program to this program to this program to this program. Well, in VFX, it feels like, oh, I know all those programs, and all what I have to do is export to the engine, the engine, the engine, result, the engine, result,
yeah,
result, result. And then it all gathers in one thing, and then the ultimate result, which is like, oh, the effect actually works, and it's in the art direction needs. And it's like this huge confidence boost, because you're like, oh, so what the industry were telling me from the beginning, that I need to be a specialist in something, I was able to prove that wrong. You know, I was able to navigate my way and say, maybe being a general, maybe like learning those different skills is worth it in the end.
Kind of, yeah. And then even in VFX, right? This is like, you could be a stylist VFX artist or a realistic VFX artist or somewhere in between or fantasy. It's still there's so much way to even specialize more than just become a VFX artist. And even within that, you can be like, okay, if you're a generalist VFX artist, you could still work at AAA, or you could still work at AAA, but you could still also work at AA companies or like other companies that need a VFX artist that just don't have the budget to hire like a specialist almost.
Yeah, yeah. And I honestly think you can always work in AAA, especially if you are such a good leader and a good communicator. Like, it doesn't matter how good you are, if you're familiar with the pipeline, and you can take a lead job, like, and you can actually lead, then that just does not matter. Because if you could lead a team, lead a department, and take the responsibility of leading, because that is valuable on its own.
Yeah.
And I think, like, nowadays, people, like, especially beginners, like, aim for AA, aim for indie work, like, aim for freelance. It's not a bad thing. You get to work on your own terms. That is the good thing of the freelance. Of course, there's job instability. But honestly, job instability is everywhere in the games industry. And we see it now falling apart. Because in my opinion, you should not hire anybody. It should all be just freelance. That's it.
Or like, or hire studios like Tuatara or whatever. You don't need to hire VFX artists anymore. You just do contract work.
Yeah. And I think if it goes to that direction, then you have those outsourcing studios that can make their own guild-like programs. A guild is like, you know, when people used to learn a skill back in the day, they went to a guild and they were all getting mentored by one person that was a senior, who was able to take, instead of two jobs a year, was able now to take 10 jobs a year because they have all those juniors beneath them that they get paid as well to do the work and they get mentored as well. That is missing in our industry. And we need that. We need to feel that. We need, because it's a vocational thing. It's not a thing you study in freaking university and then afterwards you're like, all right, ready to be hired. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not. And that is an illusion. I don't know. I don't know what drives us to think like, okay, computer science equals game art. It is not the same thing. Although it uses some of the topics, yes, but it's not the same thing.
Oh. I feel like the industry is definitely developing into towards that direction of what movies already has, I guess, where it was like you just hire or assemble a bunch of studios and they create the game. And then, for example, you have, like, here in Berlin, you have Airship Studios, which is, like, they do all the character art for Overwatch. Or at least I think there's a few other studios doing it as well now. But, like, it's just other studios doing it at this point.
Yeah.
And you just assemble a crew of, like, three studios. For example, Tuatara does Overwatch and Valorant. And then Airship.
Yeah.
Also does, like... I think they do literally the same games.
Yeah.
And it's just a semblance of like multiple studios working together that's not even the main studio anymore. And of course, the main studio still has its in-house people to finish up all the jobs or maybe have a lead there.
Mm.
But in general, I feel like the industry is moving towards that direction where everyone's just going to be like contract workers.
Yep. Yeah. And we all have to learn also the etiquette of contract work because it doesn't come natural. I think we're all like grown to have this mindset of like you need to work in a company and you need to be loyal to that company and you need to that company is going to pay your pension and it's going to pay you the taxes for you. And it's like, hey, like, why are we only teaching that part? Well, the answer is capitalism, you know. They want workers and they want workers to be replaceable and they want you to have zero confidence about yourself. Okay, cool. Let's build more confidence then. Let's have, now with online especially, like let's have an, what do you call it? Like an unconventional, unconventional way to teach those people, like especially with online and like Instagram accounts or whatever, or podcasts, whatever. Let's teach people that, hey, there's an alternative way. You know, if you're not fitting the thing they're trying to put you in, you know, there are people like you. There are people like you, me, other VFX artists that figure it out on their own. And let's tell those stories and let's show that it, you know, my normal and your normal is probably similar. And the more we normalize that, I think people will hear it and be like, I can do it. Yeah, I can do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so you also do freelance, right? Or is it just like you do this, or you used to do? Never?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. It was always a scary subject to me.
Oh, okay,
like
got
managing,
it.
Managing yourself and like, having no work for a while, you know, that was like advertising yourself. It was too hard for me, or at least like it was not too hard for me. I just didn't know how to do it, and then just accepted that I didn't know how to do it.
I mean, if you're really good, you probably don't even need to advertise yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
that's what I keep hearing. Is that people just like either work for the same studio for like 2 years or whatever, and then you're just their go-to guy.
Yeah,
or girl.
Yeah, our girl, I mean, for sure. Listen, we're heading to the end of this. Is there anything you would like to promote, you know, say, give a message to the viewers, anything that you would like to put out there?
Good question. I have not thought about this at all. I don't know. Keep learning. Sure you... I think the main thing that kind of develops your VFX career, I feel like, is try to learn something new every time. I think that's the best tip I can give.
Try to learn something new every time. And I think that for VFX especially, always lands in the right direction, because you will always need something in VFX to push it further.
The endless slug of developing yourself.
Like you could push it in any way you want. You can freaking start learning how to develop a game, and you'll be a better VFX artist. You know, you could start learning about color theory. You'll be a better VFX artist. Like,
yeah,
it's like this endless void, and you could always stack more skills. Build it
exactly.
up.
Maybe don't do VFX all the time. Maybe start drawing or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Drawing also lands in it with, like, if you want to go and pursue, like, frame by frame. It's just the beauty of the whole thing. Like, there's endless ways to make it. And yeah, there's also a lot of people that do it that want to share their knowledge. And yeah, VFX is an awesome thing. Listen, everybody, it was amazing to have you here, and that you listen to this, and you listen to this all the way till here. I'll leave all the important links that we talked about and in the link in the description below. And yeah, as always, it's Jack the Generalist, and I'll see you in the next one. All right, bye.